Really thrilled about that. I'm really excited.
Bruce Wayne, Esper?
I'm Batman.
I am the priest.
Hello and welcome to Superstition and Cowardly, an in-depth look at a rich man that likes to beat up the poor for justice. I'm Chris Winia.
And I'm John Pfeiffer. Ryan won't be able to make it. He is apparently caught in a, if I'm reading this right, sex cauldron.
Sex cauldron? I thought they closed that place down.
Well, it's still going strong. John, why don't you explain to the people exactly what this is?
This is just a Batman podcast. We're covering the early years to today. We are the American Top 40 Casey Kasem's Coast to Coast of Batman podcasts.
American Top 40 of Batman. All right, today we're going to continue our journey through night.
Get it.
By taking a look at Detective Comics 34, 35, and 36. Publishing dates December 1939 to February 1940. So we're now officially in the 40s. So all the other times we would say we were in the 40s, we were dirty Axis liars.
To be fair, though, we're not any more progressive because Detective 35, super racist. I'm really sorry.
We'll get into it. So what's going on in the non-comic world at this time? Minor Slap Fight 4, later renamed World War II, was heating up. Nations were building up their powers. Propaganda was going strong. Ships were sinking. Rations were beginning. All that good stuff. America tried to remain neutral, but was slowly being prepared by Roosevelt for the eventual dam to break. Gone with the Wind debuted in November, and by February, it would win 8 Oscars. Over in the January issue of Superman, a red-headed mad scientist named Lex Luthor would make his first appearance. Well, the next month would see the radio program The New Adventures of Superman premiere. So Superman's already got his own title.
And a radio show. He's doing. He debuted, what, about a year prior? No, he's just 37 still, too, isn't he? He's just a few months ahead.
I didn't look it up. So, let's move on to issue 34, featuring 7 thrilling stories of sleuthing, including Brett Reagan, Spy, the Ambassador of Bolaria. Buck Marshall, The Last Trick. Steve Malow, The Cleaner Protective Association, which is such a boring name for a comic. Speed Saunders, The Spy Mystery. All those other mysteries with involving spies.
I didn't read anything else in Detective Comics.
Cosmo, The Phantasm of Disguise. The Secret Treaty, which you usually want people to know if you're having a treaty, so they can follow it.
Is it a crime thing?
Bruce Nelson, The White Goddess Part 2, and Slam Bradley, The Vacation. The cover features the Crimson Avenger preparing to throw a criminal off of something. You might have noticed that Crimson Avenger was not in that list of things. That's because he's not in the issue. In fact, this will be the last issue of Detective Comics that does not feature something Batman-related on the cover. But enough of that shit, let's dive into the dangerously out-of-order peril in Paris. Written by Garner Fox, with pencils and inks by Bob Kane, and some ink assists by Sheldon Moldoff. Our story begins with a little yellow box telling us that this story places right after the clash with the monk, and Bruce has just sent Julie home in front of him. Why is anybody's guess? So Bruce decided to hang out in Paris without all the noise that the most likely traumatized Julie would be making.
They don't even decide to actually show her in the issue at all. It's, hey, he said goodbye to his girlfriend, nothing.
Bruce, it was awful. There were Batmen everywhere. Yeah. Here's a train to get back.
They don't even explain.
But I need a boat or a plane. Nope, train's fine. Don't worry about it, Julie.
What I don't get is, how does he explain that he's back in Paris? Because technically, only Batman was in Paris.
That's a good point. All right, well, let's move on.
It's just, okay, yeah, go ahead.
On the street smoking a pipe with not a care in the world, he thinks he sees his old buddy Vic Sage. But when he gets closer to question what he's doing in Paris, instead he is greeted by a man with no face.
I call him Fox Question.
How's this man talk, see, or breathe is never explained. But don't worry, because there's a lot more disturbing shit in this episode that they don't even bother to explain.
The thing is, though, before they even explain what happened to his face, I'm just like, what other orifices doesn't he have? I don't know if he has a colostomy bag or what else is going on. It's just so confounding. Is that the Fox Question?
No, he's got no face. So Bruce kind of acts like a dick to him, just yelling, my lord, in his face.
Oh my god.
But the other guy just tells him not to worry about it and walk away. But Bruce knows the name of this book and smells a mystery that needs detecting. Meanwhile, at another hotel, a young woman reads a note from with the mark of Duc de Tour. Is that how you would say it? I'm not entirely sure.
I just kept calling him Duke. Okay. I'm not even going to try to pronounce that correctly. I'm not going to manage it.
Well, this starts the running theme of adding French words to the story that I'm not sure I can pronounce. So
well,
we're not going to
we already know that Bowfinger has has an affinity for that. He was in the Dirigible of Doom, I think he said adieu to some... in a Dr. Death issue, he said adieu to somebody that he helped save from poisoning and everything. He just likes inserting French stuff. But it's Gardner Fox, which is a weird thing.
Well, whatever the mark of dictateur means, it just scares the shit out of her until she runs into a cab, which is Bruce's cab. Apparently he decided not to follow our polite, defaced friend. Bruce doesn't even have time to tell her she's paying for half the tab when a knife comes out of nowhere and gets right where she was sitting. And I do mean out of nowhere because it's never elaborated on or explained again.
Well, here's the thing that I noticed, and you gotta see it too when you go from panel to panel. All of a sudden, she teleports to the other side of him.
She does.
And that's not explained. I don't know if it's a power, a slip of the tongue. I mean, if you're the artist on this, why can't you just draw that panel again in the other side? I just don't... Okay, sure.
Long story short, they run away, and she faints right before she can explain exactly what's going on. The man with no face also shows up, and they take her home. But don't worry, guys, because we find out that they are brother and sister, named Charles and Carol.
I really like how when Bruce realizes why she fainted, he assumes it's because she just saw the face of somebody horribly ugly. Like, he just insults him right away. Like,
he does.
Hey, ugly, you just made her faint. You're so fugly.
So our defaced friend decides to say that the Duke met them at a party and became smitten with Carell. And when Charles told her that her sister wasn't going to be dating no Sinestro-looking motherfucker, he did what any sperm boyfriend would do and melted his fucking face off.
How does that even work with a ray? Shouldn't there still be holes?
With a beam.
Shouldn't there still be holes?
And then I guess he just let him go. So now he wants Carl, or to kill her, or to get the rest of the story is vague on that.
They mention money, and they mention he just wants to get with her. Why? Why let somebody go when you melted their face off? How does melting their face off not dictate, you know, scars, or dill slits for eyes, or something? Just,
well,
what?
Bruce doesn't ask these questions either. He just decides to walk out of the room, and then walk back right in his Batman. I guess the whole secret identity thing doesn't matter in Paris.
Well, they say, will you... It's almost like you're, if you were a kid and you were pretending to be a superhero, like, just one second, I'm gonna get my superhero friend, and then he just kind of, like, goes in the corner, changes his clothes, comes back, like, hi, I'm Batman. You mean Bruce? No. He's my friend. I'm his bodyguard.
So we get a few frames that I'm pretty sure are recycled from past stories, as Bruce sneaks into Sinestro's underground lair and beats up his guys.
He just goes from being on a rooftop to just falling into a sewer, like a manhole cover and everything, where in my head I'm just like, he didn't mean to do that. He's like, oh shit, falls in.
So while he's there, he just beats the shit out of Sinestro's guys. But when Sinestro shows up, he zaps him with his power, his cane, and gives him a good zap.
Sure. There's so many things that just confuse me anymore, where what?
Well, let's take a look at his thought process. So when some guy dressed up as a giant bat randomly shows up and beats up some of your employees, what do? You tie him to a giant wheel and spin him around until he dies, of course.
They call it the Wheel of Chance, but there's two options in here that he lists out. Either he gets smashed when the wheel hits, like, the wall or the floor or whatever, or it keeps missing and he eventually goes crazy. That's not a Wheel of Chance. You have one of two ways to potentially die.
Well, one is you live with the horrors. But speaking of horrors, Bruce just snaps his ropes and jumps off into the most disturbing thing we've ever seen so
there's
far.
There's always a ceiling grate, or there's always a trap door. I don't know where these people are going, where this is always an option.
All right, John, always. But he lands in a garden with flowers that have women's faces on it.
He's
this
tripping
is
out.
The weirdest shit
this
in the entire
This is some Strawberry
story.
Fields type shit. It really is.
Thank you.
That's my favorite thing.
So that's fucking disturbing. And I don't feel like you are as disturbed as the flower ladies as I am.
Oh, I'm disturbed by it, but I'm trying to, like, just draw up a mental block against that. It's just...
Well, all right.
They don't explain why, like, he's tripping out either. It just happens.
Well, it seems to imply... Well, we'll get into that.
Are they
that.
Implying that it's because he spun around so much he just went crazy?
Well, we'll get into that. So Sinestro decides there's no way Batman can escape
the
that.
Widow peak on this fucker.
So he and his men just go pick up the brother and sister and places the brother on the wheel and decides to either deflower or reflower the sister. Meanwhile, Insanity...
Wait. Back up. What?
He either plans to deflower or reflower, turning her into a flower.
You think that's a scientific process? I thought he was tripping out.
Well, first off, you ruined my joke.
I didn't mean it.
A frog can be better understood by dissecting it, but you kill the frog in the process. So meanwhile, in Sandy 1, the plants decide to telepathically tell Batman where the door is. and then they are never mentioned again.
How do they know?
Bruce stops Charles' wheel by spinning a rope on it, because that's pretty much all Batman ever does in the 40s, unless he grabs a gas vial. Don't worry, it'll show up in the next two issues.
How is he strong enough to stop that? Is there somebody on the other end just turning a big-ass crank? Like, they imply this is mechanical.
They do. He then jumps into the Batplane to chase down Sinestro's
car. And where did that come from?
Parking very close. He jumps on the top and they struggle, and then he starts choking Sinestro, which seems to make the car go off the cliff despite the fact that Sinestro wasn't driving and the fight was in the back seat. It's kind of like, you ever seen No Holds Barred, the Hulk Hogan movie?
No.
Where he's in the back, he's like locked up in a limo, and he decides to kick the door of the car and it causes the entire car to swerve because apparently he's fucking Superman or something.
I can almost buy that. I can buy that more than this other stuff, like a man with no face still surviving. And I like throughout the issue, he's giving Batman orders and directions, and Batman's just like, okay, bye, thanks.
I'm not doing that. So anyways, the Batplane is apparently alive and swings down so that he can grab the ladder and get Karin out mid-crash. Afterwards, I thank him, but wonder who he is, despite the fact that he basically changed outfits right in front of them. Who the hell is Bruce Wayne indeed?
Does he even try anymore? We're only, like, what, 7 issues in? We're under 10. And he doesn't even try to have a secret identity. Like, he's just really like, hey, I'm gonna get Batman. Wink, wink. And then,
well, you could argue that he's in Paris, like Wonder Woman, and Bruce Wayne isn't a celebrity at this point. So what do you think about this, John?
On the one hand, this is one of those issues that really makes it glad that once we get to Robin, we're gonna try to get out of the 40s as fast as possible. And I'm really happy about that. On the other hand, without terrible stories like this, there's so much less to confuse me and make fun of. And I kind of like having that experience of going, why? Why doesn't he have a face? Why is he the Fox Question? I did research just to make sure that he wasn't, like, created by the same guy that created the Question, which I didn't realize was either fully or co-created by Steve Ditko, which co-created Spider-Man. That's a super, super side note. I know.
Thanks, Wikipedia.
That's a super side note. But that's why. And why does he try to get Batman orders? And why does Batman agree to it? And why are these flowers just a weird psycho dream? No. Or are they an experiment? I mean, if he can melt a guy's face off and he can still live, I guess they could be people.
All right, John, settle down.
When are we going to get John, to the fireworks John, factory? John. I just don't get it.
Settle down. Everybody involved with this is dead. So don't worry about that.
You know,
I don't actually know if that's true. Next is issue 35. Get your magnifying glasses ready for 8 more stories of vague detecting and street justice from the likes of Bart Riggin, Spy, The Unknown Sub, Buck Marshall's Branded Yellow, Steve Malloy, The Kidnapping Racket. Oh, Steve Malloy, sorry. It's almost like I didn't even look up who he was. Speed Saunders, The Voodoo Vengeance, Cosmo, the Phantom of Disguise, The Strange Death of Dr. Dupree, Bruce Nelson, The White Goddess, Part 3, and Slam Bradley, In the Foreign Legion. Further compounding the out-of-nature story of our last story, this cover seems to feature Sinestro from the last story about to inject some chemicals into a rugged-looking old man, with a torn shirt only for Bruce to give the sleeper hold on him. The ref is checking his arm. 1, 2, we got a new champion!
Yay! Batman looks really, really good in this, though. I mean, his ears are a little, like, super, super long. Like, one of those issues that were in, like, the 80s for a brief amount of time. He had, like, super absurdly long ears.
Oh, I thank hate you. That one.
Otherwise, he's looking more like himself. Like, we're getting a lot closer to that more consistently. Why is there a preview of the last issue? That doesn't quite happen.
It's gonna happen again.
Like, too. I'm used to covers not being accurate to what's in the issue, but to give me a partial preview of the previous issue, that's new for me. And everyone's jacked.
Yeah, he's a very rugged-looking old man.
Look at Sinestro there. He's got the same jack thing. He's even wearing short sleeves so he can show off his guns a little bit.
But last but not least is the Asian America Legal Defense and Education Fund's worst nightmare with The Jade Statue, written by Bill Finger, with pencils and inks by Bob Kane and Sheldon Maldroff. Said that wrong. I don't care.
I never read these other parts of Detective. I just go for Batman, and then I move on.
I didn't. This is a Wikipedia thing.
So we open up to a scene of Batman just real quick, and it doesn't connect to any issue at all. And he's just holding literally a smoking gun, but he doesn't have a holster anymore.
Well, it's like he does in all these issues, right? Because Batman in the 40s always used a gun, right?
He always has a gun, like, not connected to anything else.
Yeah.
So far, as far as I've seen.
Yeah, he doesn't use a gun in this issue at
he
all.
He totally kills people. But he didn't kill anybody. Well, you know, he killed somebody off a bridge in 34. He drove right off the cliff.
That wasn't really his fault, though.
Yeah, but that's like in Batman Begins where he just lets Ra's al Ghul like fall off that train.
Well, he's not going to save Sinestro and leave the girl to die. He can only save one of them.
Fair.
So we cut to Gordon appearing after a 7-issue absence. And it does leave us wondering why the hell he even lets Bruce hang around him.
It's almost like his undisclosed career, or Bruce Wayne's undisclosed career at the time, is like a newspaper journalist. They just don't say it.
It does imply
They reference it a lot, and he even like makes a newspaper article, I think, either in this issue or we might see it in the next.
Yeah, this one does imply that, but never states it. So anyways, a private collector comes in to tell of a plot against him. Bruce is okay to hear this because he's Gordon's friend. The collector tells of a man named Lennox. Remember that. It'll be forgotten by the writer later. Coming into his shop to make an idol out of solid ruby that he wants to sell. I guess the collector is a millionaire because there's no way a solid ruby idol wouldn't go for a ton of money on the open market.
What I don't get is, like, did you Google the name for the statue? It's Kila,
No.
It's Kila, the god
of... bud. You're doing great.
Oh, I'm gonna add all that out.
No, you won't.
It's Kila, the god of destruction, as a ruby idol, but that Hindu god doesn't exist at all. There's one that's a similar kind of pronunciation, like Kila, but the I and the L are in completely different spots, almost like Billfinger or whoever's the letter in this had like dyslexia. So they don't bother getting the name right. And it's also that guy of destruction was a female, not a male. So they get that wrong too.
He looks like a little devil. So anyways, it seems super after buying it, he received threatening letters from some Indian stereotypes, saying that Lennox will die, but that he can live if he gives up the idol. Gordon snaps into action, saying they need to get to Lennox before he's killed. Also, you want to come along, Bruce? Because that's why not.
Maybe I'll write a story about it. It might be an ongoing investigation. You don't just let a newspaper person just hang out in your car.
Bruce also says why not, because he's a dick.
He just always seems... He never seems necessarily terribly nice, but he always seems like a special asshole for Jim Gordon. The few times we've seen him.
Well, wouldn't you know it, they arrived just in time for stereotype brigade number one to grab Lennox in his car.
This is Manhattan, and there's only one other car on the street.
After a short chase, they stab him in the chest and dump his body into the river. Why didn't they just kill him when they grabbed him is a smaller plot hole compared to what's coming up.
I have more, though. They write that note, and he gets it, and he tells Gordon about it an hour after. They had so much time to kill him. Are they just driving around the block, back and forth, just waiting, like, okay, he's not here yet, guys, drive around one more time. The guys that are grabbing him, these Kila cultists, they're supposedly just Hindus. Okay, the word Hindu is not bad at all. But they have turbans, which is fine again, and then they're shirtless. They try to make them look as savage as possible and as racist as possible. And just, I get having something evil to blame, but oh my god. And also, I forgot, and how did I forget to talk about this? In last issue, they were Apaches in French. They weren't even Native Americans. It's just all over the place.
I don't remember that. So the cops decide to drag the river while Bruce goes home to write the story because he's a dick. The next day, the paper tells the whole story, and some crooks plan to steal the deadly idol for padding reasons. It's the only real reason I can decide they even have this in there. It's like, we need a couple more pages. But they decide to wait a few weeks until the heat's off, and the collector tells Gordon that he thinks everything is safe now, and that the cops can leave him alone. Apparently, it never crossed his mind that the cops being there is what's keeping him safe. That's fine, I have a rock that will keep elephants away from him that he might like.
I like Gordon's response of, Walden, it's your ruby, and it's your life. I'll take my men away. But the way he says it, it's just like, well, it's your life, fine, you want to be a fucker, go ahead. And then Bruce kind of starts connecting these dots of being suspicious about, oh, the police are gone, I should keep an eye out on this.
Because he's not an idiot.
Yeah, in this instance, he's not an idiot. But then he changes into his costume and holy fucking facelift Batman. That the cheeks on that mask are just so high.
It passes eyes. So now we have three groups after the idol. Some crooks bust in and are quickly defeated by Batman, only for the stereotype brigade to smack Batman on the back of the head and grab said idol. And when the police show up and Batman beats them up, he just kind of runs away. He then follows the stereotype brigade in the prototype Batmobile.
They call it a roadster and everything. Like, this is really cool. And for a second, I got really excited there was a lot of fins on it, but it's just Batman from a distance, like, with his cape kind of in the air as he jumps in.
We won't see it get fins.
But it's our first real hint at it.
It is our first Batmobile.
And it's super exciting. But I like that he crashes through a window when he's just escaping the cops. And when he's staking out the place before any of this really goes down, he's just hanging out that second story window again, like... How often does he do that? He's just hanging out windows. He'd go in the house, be really quiet, go up the stairs. He'd probably have a better vantage point, but no, he's super open, like if anyone wanted to attack him or anything.
So then he chases them down to Chinatown. Oh dear.
They're mixing their Orientals. And I say that because Xin Feng is legitimately mentioned as the Oriental Xin Feng. He's not a rug. Why do we gotta be mean to this guy?
Batman does decide that the comic is getting more and more racist, so he decides to stop by and talk to a non-evil minority about Xin Feng.
The mayor of Chinatown.
The unofficial mayor of Chinatown, Wong.
I don't know, what's wrong with you?
I'm sorry.
He's
pretty good, actually.
I'm sorry, everybody.
So he doesn't really tell him anything. He's just like, they're probably going to chop up the ruby idol into smaller rubies. And Bruce just kind of goes, well, no shit, Sherlock.
And then he heads over to Xin Feng, and Batman breaks it down. You know, I think you have a stolen ruby and everything. And then Xin Feng tries to play dumb and coy, like, oh, I didn't know it was stolen. Come with me and, you know, we'll get this cleared up right away. No problem,
Bruce,
sir.
Totally just comes in and says, hey, you know that idol that those guys stole? I think it might be stolen. It was in all the papers. And the other guy's like, oh, shit, that idol? Well, let's go get it.
He was so careful before this point, and then he's like, just walking through the front door. That's fine.
So he takes Batman into the back of his illogically trapped shop. First, Batman gets bum-rushed by some goddamn Mongolians with swords.
They're mixing things again! There's so many different Asian ethnicity people in this, and it's just so racist for all of them. I mean, there's Mongolians, there's Chinese, and there's Hindus. Why do you gotta be mean to all of them and villainize all of them?
Well, speaking of being mean to them, Batman just kicks one of them into the sword and punches the other one out. And Xin Feng apologizes, saying the guards must have mistaken Batman for a weirdo in a costume.
But Batman doesn't apologize about
killing
that guy.
Well, Batman assures him that that kind of thing just happens all the time and not to worry about it.
I'm sorry I killed that guy. Do you need me to, you know, move him off your rug? Nah, it's fine.
No, come into this gas chamber. I mean this other room where I have mustard gas that pours out. But it's okay because Batman has an antidote in his pocket. I bet that the UN would really like to know about that.
If they had that during World War II, that would be amazing. Cutting that out.
Batman... No, I like that. Batman says that Fang's pikes must be leaking, and Fang apologizes profusely for this. And then he drops Zack entirely and drops Bruce down a trap door.
There's always a trap door! Always!
But luckily, there's also always a pipe jutting out that Bruce can grab onto before he gets wet.
I'm surprised he didn't fall to the bottom of that and then just, you know, toss his rope up for like 6 hours before he realized he could tie it to a batarang and climb up.
So, Xin Feng, being a stupid villain, decides to take off his disguise to reveal that he's Lennox. It seems he faked his own death to avoid getting blamed for stealing the idol.
Why doesn't anyone confirm that Batman actually died when they trap him? It happened in the last issue, it happened in the issue before that, and before that, and before that. No one ever sticks around to make sure that he dies.
This guy's an idiot, though, because he stole the idol that he had at the beginning of the comic.
Why did he sell it in the first... They never explain why they sell it in the first place. Continue, though.
No, that's it! I mean, the rest of the episode is just that he says he also killed Xin Feng and pulls a gun on Batman.
And then Batman tosses the idol at him, and he falls to the ground, and somehow that's poetic justice because of the curse of the idol.
It's street justice.
Which, the curse of the idol is something that he might have made up. I guess there's some irony to it then. We know that Lennox, and did they call him a different name after a certain point? You mentioned something.
No, his name is just Lennox.
Okay, but Lennox is dressed as Xin Feng, and he is wearing, like, yellow face and just yellow gloves that somehow pass off his skin, and it's just, it's so racist. He's just, here, let me draw some slanted eyes, and that's no problem. And apparently his Chinese is so good that all the other people that he deals with on a regular basis just believe that he is Xin Feng, which is really cool and everything, but... My God, it's so racist and it's so convoluted. Why sell it off in the first place? Why not just run away and sell it off and make the money?
Well, maybe.
Why involve Walden at all?
Well, you could argue that he gets money twice this way.
And why hire the Hindus?
It doesn't make sense. Let's just
move on.
And
they're fake Hindus. They're potentially just regular white guys also wearing like yellow face. It's just so bad.
Sweet baby boy, it doesn't matter. You are sweaty. All right. And now for the last issue of our issue. Detective Comics 36, featuring a villain that we still occasionally see today. But do you want to know what else you get with your dime in this issue of Detective Comics? Well, you get Bart Regan, Spy, in The Rantor, Buck Marshall, The Claim of Satan, Steve Marlowe, Rocky Roman, Speed Saunders, The Speeder, Cosmo, The Phantom of Disguise, The Purple Mesa, Bruce Nelson, A Weekend Party at the Mountain Lodge, and Slam Bradley, the Long Chi Tong. But say goodbye to Buck Marshall and Bruce Nelson. These are their last issues. Good night, sweet princes. I never even bothered looking you up on Wikipedia.
The cover is a preview of last issue, so I'm all caught up already.
Oh, you gotta keep that 40s racism alive.
It's just Mongols. That might be white guys in Asian face.
Well, there is a war going on that we're not involved with yet, so you gotta keep that going. All right, and now for the main event. The debut of Rogues Gallery B/C-lister Hugo Strange. As we said in an earlier issue, Hugo's a personal favorite of mine. He's a rather flexible villain. Sometimes a psychiatrist, other times a mad scientist. But usually flanked by his monster men, which we'll meet in a couple issues. But he's almost always a psychological villain as opposed to a physical one for Batman to fight.
When we see later that he's known right away as a villain and stuff, but if we can, we'll just get into it.
Well, he's kind of based, I didn't really see that there was anything that anybody cited as a basis, but he's very much a Moriarty from Sherlock Holmes. He's a professor just like Moriarty. He's already like the greatest criminal ever, and he's kind of set up as Bruce's.
He's like the opposite. He's like Nega Batman or whatever. Yeah.
So in the 75 plus years since he was introduced, he's kept a somewhat low profile and tends to appear for stories here and there as opposed to regularly like a Joker.
He came in, but he came in Batman Rebirth in Detective Comics, and he brought back his monster men, where these were basically giant like kaiju, you know, based off of, you know, implanting people that had died recently, or they died because they turned into kaiju, that kind of thing. So they try to bring that back, and I can't remember who's the writer of Detective Comics.
He is, he kind of shows up every 20 years or so. Like, in the 70s, he had a rather famous run, which we'll probably be looking at, called Strange Apparitions. In the 90s, he had a bunch of story arcs in Legends of the Dark Knight with Fear, and a later sequel titled Terror, so there's a theme there. And then the 2000s saw a remake of the earlier Monk story that we already did. And also a sequel, which was a remake of The Monster Men, which we'll get to in a little while. Outside of the comics world, he made appearances in most post-90s Batman TV shows, including the animated series, The Batman, Brave and the Bold, Young Justice, and recently, Gotham, where he's portrayed by an Asian actor named B.D. Wong. Ironic, considering our last issue.
B.D. Wong's actually a really fun actor. Like, if you watch SVU and everything, he's really fun. But he's always played this fun, nice person, like a psychiatrist, FBI agent. And then he plays a really big dick in the sequel to Jurassic Park. And he's in both Jurassic Park and Jurassic World. I didn't realize that Strange was an animated series. I can't remember that.
He's in a single episode.
Is it like a later on episode, like a 3 or 4?
No, it's in one of the first runs.
Really?
He finds out that Batman is Bruce Wayne, and it's kind of based on the Strange Apparitions comic book.
Is that the one where...
he tries to auction it off to the Joker and the Penguin.
Is that the one where he like finds Batman's outfit and he wears it and everything? I can't remember what...
In the comics, yes. I don't believe he did that in the show, though.
I just like that Batman's outfit at that time period for, like, his Kevlar and stuff. It's just... It looks like a quilt underneath his shirt.
It's just a shirt.
It's just a sweater.
I haven't actually seen Gotham, but B.D. Wong looks awesome as him. It's pretty much, like, what you'd want the character
to look like.
He's
starting to bald like him, so yeah.
Well, he is bald in it. Sure. He was going to be a big part of the Cadmus arc in Justice League Unlimited, but was removed after, like, a cameo.
Was it too much complications trying to explain the character?
No, it was because, like, after a certain point, all Batman characters were off the show. Because of a rights issue with the Batman that was also being made.
Oh, no, I thought that was predated even Justice League, because that's Unlimited.
Yeah.
I thought that predated even Justice League.
No, it's in Justice League, but...
Okay.
Yeah, Unlimited is when they kind of stopped. He snuck in for a cameo, and they're like, nah, you can't.
Yeah, because they want to give more publicity to the Batman.
Yeah.
I think that was the main reason they give. If that's true or not, it might be another thing.
He was also recently the focus of a short celebrating Batman's 75th anniversary called Strange Days. You ever seen it?
I haven't. No, not at all.
It's actually pretty cool. It's kind of based on what we're looking at.
I didn't realize, and this has to be better known to at least a decent amount of Batman fans, that he predates these other long-standing villains to at least a few issues. And that's always really fun. And I didn't realize even here, and we'll see it, that he's always oddly buff. For things, like, you see him in other things too, and he also looks oddly muscular for his either demeanor or, you know, the rest of his appearance. It doesn't quite seem to match the rest of them. And I always thought that was really kind of interesting, where he was that negative Batman, but he still had at least some physical capabilities.
Whenever there's a Batman movie, lately it's kind of been, probably not with the ones that are being made now, but I remember Rises, he was always rumored to be in there. I heard Robin Williams was in consideration to play him because he'd been in, like, other Chris Nolan movies, and that would have been really interesting. But probably his most high-profile appearance was as the main villain of the Arkham City video game. And while he was kind of usurped in the game by Joker, which happens through most of these games.
Yeah.
He was still the main focus of much of the advertisement, has some of the best scenes in the game. I like when Bruce confronts him with all the death and destruction that he's caused, and he just laughs like a madman. So have a seat on the couch, and we'll properly introduce you to Hugo Strange. Written by Bill Finger, penciled by Bob Kane and Jerry Robinson, with inks again by Bob Kane and Sheldon Moldoff.
I like that Batman's just on the opening scene is Batman on the roof looking, you know, at New York City traffic. Again, just a single car, so it's not what we know today as super heavy traffic. Otherwise, the other alternative is an artist being lazy, and I refuse to believe that. And he looks like Batman. His ears are a little more curved, which is a little different.
Well, one of the things we have that we haven't had yet is the gloves have the little fins on them now.
I didn't even notice that, you're right.
This is the first, and it'll stay around till today.
I love that.
Which I think that they don't really have a...
In the movies, and in the comics,
like swords and stuff, but it's not.
It's
really
meant to be is like a defensive kind of way to block things, and they use that in like newer comics, like last 10 years or so. Yeah. I think they really focus on that.
They're actually just fins. I don't think they have any like.
They're implying they're just. I wouldn't be surprised if they're implying it's just fabric held up by like a pipe cleaner.
Yeah,
something like that.
So Bruce is walking around on the rooftops, and suddenly there's a drive by. But when they see Batman racing towards them, they forget about their guns and just run away.
They even say, and I don't know how far away Batman is, but even Batman hears them say, the Batman, let's go get out of here and everything. And they're really surprised. And the Batman's made a reputation for himself where everyone knows that it's the Batman.
So Batman goes up to the dying man and gets a very cryptic response. He gets fog. Strange fog. Strange. And then he dies. So Batman decides to start looting him. I mean, look for clues on him.
It's really expensive being Batman. In right now, we don't know he has for finances.
Well, there's rationings going on, so.
It's a wartime effort. You can't let anything go to waste.
So before he can really get at his wallet, the police show up and ruin everything.
And they automatically just draw guns and just start chasing him and they want to fire.
Well, last time he showed up, he beat him up.
True enough. And it's just, he clears a fence, and then they look over the fence and go, he's gone. They don't even try to, like, coordinate their positions or anything. They just give up really quickly for the fact that they think that he murdered somebody. Several people, actually, if you think about it, over the course of, you know, months, we're assuming at this point.
So later at his house, pipe in mouth, Bruce decides it's strange they must be talking about old Professor Strange. But Alfred just says that he's just some crazy old hermit living in the wastelands. Star Wars reference, we can cut that out. So later, pipe in mouth, Bruce decides that they must be talking about Professor Strange, who's a criminal mastermind that claims to know that Bruce doesn't know anything about, but knows that he's the greatest criminal in the world.
It's one of those things that just really confuses me. Like, oh, he said the word the. The is the Greek word for the. It must mean that it's, oh, Doctor Strange. It's just, the connections are so loose that how he draws them and how he becomes so certain of them... is just so odd.
But he's
and
right, why,
though. And let's say the guy, the agent, or whoever this guy is that got shot, I don't mean to give it away, shit. The stranger that got shot just says fog, strange fog. Why can't he just say Doctor Strange? It would cut so much stuff out. Like, I know he's shot and he's not in the right state of mind and he's gonna die, but just saying doctor before the word strange would clear so much up.
He's a professor. So... before he died, Bruce was able to grab a notebook out of the pocket of this FBI agent. And while it mostly deals with Alzheimer and the troubles it had on his relationship, it also has a list of businesses that Strange must be planning to hit. How he got this information is baffling.
I just like how, and I know this really started right around this point, but they really focus on using the term G-Man. And I kind of wish they kept that, like, I mean, in actual society, I wish they kept G-Man. Like, if I could use that today... And just say in a newspaper article, just read G-Man this, G-Man that. Oh, it sounds so much fun. You could, but everyone would look at you weird.
So, meanwhile, Professor Strange is sitting...
that wormy-looking motherfucker.
...is sitting with his fingers tented, looking at the fire.
Well, Mr. Burns. Report,
very Mr. Burns. Where he gets a report from the driver about Batman's involvement. Well, mad that they didn't just, you know, shoot Batman, he decides to just go along with his plans anyways.
He's trying to intimidate the driver, like, he's really pissed at first. And he towers, like, he's a foot taller than this guy. And you can already see, like, he's wearing a suit, but you can already see that he's fairly muscular. He just has a lumpy-shaped head.
He does. Looks like a testicle. So his plan is revealed that he's going to put a bunch of fog out so the police can't follow them. So he's seriously the world's greatest criminal.
And the they cut to two random police officers that I'm assuming they're a progressive couple at this point. They keep shooting to progressive couples off screen that don't have anything to do with the story.
Take that, modern television.
You know what? At one point, Billfinger is really racist with Hindus and Orientals. And then the next thing, he's just showing very progressive views with two gay men. And they start talking, you know, this fog could lead to trouble. We could see robberies. And I assume they're applying like looting and riot and all this other stuff. But they talk about it with such a superstitious tone. They talk about it with such a superstitious tone, and just to be able to say that this is a bad omen, and you're a cop, man.
It's funny that you have, like, gone into this so much, because, like, I didn't write this down in my notes at all, because I thought it was so insignificant.
Well, the fact, if it was on its own, yeah, but the last issue, they cut to two guys that don't have anything to do with the story, also talking about things as this narrative plot device, which is fine.
You gotta fill up those 12 pages somehow.
But they could use that part of that panel to actually elaborate on the story with characters that are involved in the story.
Well, speaking of characters involved with the story, we cut back to a bepiped Bruce Wayne as he hears two unrelated news reports of the robbery and also a missing engineer, and decides that they must be related. So he decides to go to the second name on the list and lies in wait for the crux. What happens next is a massive pun-filled battle royal. Criminals beware of my bowling pin puns. Dark brooding detective indeed.
This is a very Robin thing to do before Robin. The way that he's just, it looks like he's having a lot of fun just clearing this room and messing up a bunch of guys. Like, if this was a montage in a movie, I assume I'm hearing Ballroom Blitz at the same time.
That's fair.
And it's just, it's fun, it's great. He's more lighthearted. He's not that brooding character that's super dark that we keep hearing about, that he's always been.
That we really haven't seen too much of.
He's being Robin before Robin, like I said.
So, long story short, he takes out these guys by pinning them over like bowling pins, as he says. And then he just picks up one of their guns, shoots it in the air to get the police over there. Strange is understandably pissed, but he just decides to go through the plans and just add 12 guys.
And he decides that Batman must have some knowledge of their plans. He's shown up at a couple of their hits and everything on their list, so there's a leak somewhere. So he plans that trap.
So Batman walks into a 12-on-1 handicap match. John, why don't you take us through it? This thrilling action.
He's more quippy. It reminds me, and I don't know why, it reminds me of a scene from like a Ninja Turtles movie where he goes into the place that's next on the list for their robbery. And as soon as he comes in, lights turn on. There's a bunch of guys that are ready for him. But he seems like he is at a different floor than they are when the way that it's drawn and everything. So I don't know why he doesn't just turn around and run away or something. But he heads headfirst into the fight, tries to clear the room quickly and just kind of bypass everybody by jumping over a rope. And then he just goes over him and knocks him downstairs. He's really doing some Home Alone 2 type maneuvers, trying to get these guys cleared out.
A lot of roping and kicking and punning.
And he's doing great. Like, this is the most action with the most original scenes, and he doesn't fall through a trap door, he doesn't go through a skylight.
He doesn't use a gas pellet. He's great.
It's literally him and what we perceive as his actual skills, if we can call them that. But he's doing great against, you know, multiple people.
Until they smack him in the head.
And to be fair, the fact that at least somebody gets a hit on him, and he gets knocked out is kind of nice, because the fact that he went on that long, it's just enough to make it fun, but not make me think, okay, this is no longer believable. I'm already suspending my disbelief that a man stresses a bat clearing a bunch of thugs out, but don't ask me to do that one more thing. So they don't do that, which is great.
So they bring him back to Strange, and Strange is straps into a wall and starts whipping him a bit, which is pretty kinky.
There's some 50 Shades of Grey type stuff going on here. Like, he is really into S&M. So was Sinestro on the episode before. Yes.
So, but he gets whipped a bunch of times, like in the face, which probably would have killed you.
And Indiana Jones, he even, like, touches his cheek a little bit in Last Crusade.
So, like, he just snaps his bonds again and throws a gas pellet. You know, that old chestnut.
And everyone tries to run away in the room, and just in the nick of time, he grabs Strange by the legs. But when you look at that panel, he is so... What's wrong with his legs? He's like a little plastic man. I just noticed that. Let's say he's 6 foot tall. 4 feet is his legs.
But also, like, he tackles him, and then Strange is strangling him.
They're playing tussling. I get it.
But a quick judo toss later, and Batman's on top of him and punches the bejesus out of his face.
But you notice Strange is jacked, like his sleeves are rolled up and everything, and he is muscular. Like, he hits the gym hard.
So, with Strange out, because he punched him super hard, Batman looks around and finds the machine and the kidnapped engineer who apparently invented it somehow. And then they switch it off. That's pretty much the end of it. Later, while everybody praises Batman on the radio, summing up with a man telling his son that he's a great man. Batman, not the son.
How does the city know that Batman did anything?
Well, he told him.
Did Bruce write a story in the newspaper?
The radio claims that we're never going to see Hugo again, but Batman knows since he hasn't accidentally killed him this issue that he's going to return. And Hugo seems to be aware of this as well, because he just claims revenge.
Is this one of the first, like, potentially deathless issues?
Yes.
Wait, no. Technically, somebody dies, but Batman didn't have any involvement in his death. No. That still counts. That has to count. There's no way that it doesn't. I'm so proud of him. He's showing progress.
Well, we'll see
my little Hugo Batman
in Batman issue 1, which is coming out in 3 months, 40s time.
I like it. I think it's fun. I thought for a minute, while I'm happy to see Doctor Strange in this, it's just, when I finished it, I just thought, why didn't they just use Dr. Death again? Or another criminal that we've already seen in the past. Why keep making a new villain consistently all these issues?
Well, I'm pretty sure that we're going to see that they've realized that themselves as well in a few issues.
Eventually just kind of slow down.
Yeah.
How did you feel?
It was... I'm also, like, currently reading Golden Age Plastic Man. I find those very entertaining, well, as I find these just to be, oh, that's something. I think of what we've
I want to rant about so them, but far. I want them to be over, is what these issues feel
yeah,
like.
Yeah, well, this is probably the best of the ones we've seen so far. There's still not a lot to it. There's not a lot of depth. We get our first, well, it's not even our first, like, the thing that's interesting about Plastic Man, he fights real criminals. Dope fiends and racketeers and stuff.
How are they
Batman
more...
always... fights like these supervillains that want to destroy the city or just keep sending notes to people. Very melodramatic.
What about Frenchie Blake?
Dapper Frenchie Blake.
He just wants to rob the city and everything.
Yeah, but we've kind of gotten away from the Dapper Frenchie Blakes and we're now like the Monk and Sinestro and all this stuff.
For a character that supposedly doesn't like the mystical, that doesn't like the unexplained, he gets into it a lot.
That's going to continue. But, speaking of continuing, next issue, we have two big reveals, which is Robin the Boy Wonder and the Joker. So hopefully you'll come on back for that.
Coming next episode, we're going to be talking about Detective Comics number 37. We're going to see Gangs and Spies. 38 brings us the original award, Robin the Boy Wonder. And then we're going to go ahead and start skipping around to other issues and read Batman number 1.
So all that's left to say is our social plugs. Listeners can find us on Twitter. We are at SAC Batpod. Or email us at sac.alfred@gmail.com. People can find episodes on Apple Podcast and other websites listed in the episode description. So, from the shadowy depths, I've been Chris Winia.
And I'm John Pfeiffer.
Be safe. But you know what else you get in with your dime in this issue of Detective Comics? Comets?